I just want to say to all my fellow hip-hop artists and hip-hop fans that we have been had again.
Damn.
We've been bamboozled.
Hoodwinked.
Led astray, I tell you.
All the Malcolm X words.
Once again, you know what I'm saying? Now, a few of y'all might have already heard about this, about how the music industry has very close ties with the private prison system.
Yeah.
And the reason being is because the music business has invested millions of dollars in the private prison system.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You heard it correctly. Again, the music business and the entertainment business in general, meaning people who control the media, the music industry, and also
publication,
private prisons.
Yeah, magazines, all that.
Somebody sent me an article, like, I think it was like 6 or 7 years ago.
Right.
And I read this article, bro, and I was like absolutely shocked.
Talk to us.
In fact, I want to read this letter. I mean, this article, but it's actually a letter that was written by somebody that was a decision maker at a major label.
Shot caller.
And he said, you know, he was invited to a very special meeting about the future of hip hop back in 1991.
Okay.
So here's what he said. This is how the events went down at the meeting.
Break it down, man.
Okay, just ride with me, okay? Because I'm reading this. Oh, this is real. Hold on, wait. Let me try to.
Way out article too, man. You know what I'm saying? When he told me on telephone about this, wait till y'all hear this, G. You know what I'm saying? It's mesmerizing how these people do. You know what I'm saying? The plans that they got to for the down, for how far they will go, you know what I'm saying, to make people, you know, actually slip in society. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, so it says, and the title of the letter is The Secret Meeting That Changed Rap Music and Destroyed a Generation.
Damn.
So it says, hello. After more than 20 years, I finally decided to tell the world what I witnessed in 1991, which I believe was one of the biggest turning points in popular music and ultimately American society. I have struggled for a long time weighing the pros and cons of making my story public, as I was reluctant to implicate the individuals who were present that day. So I've simply decided to leave out the names and all the details that may risk my personal well-being and that of those who were, like me, dragged into something they weren't ready for.
Damn.
Hold on, let me
So we gonna tell the story.
We gonna tell the story. We ain't scared.
You know what I'm saying? What they gonna do?
They after us, not just playing.
Look, that black man.
So look. So he says, between the late 80s and early 90s, I was what you may call a decision maker with one of the more established companies in the music industry. I came to Europe in the early 80s and quickly established myself in the business. The industry was different back then, since technology and media weren't accessible to people like that, like they are today. The industry had more control over the public and had the means to influence them any way it wanted.
Right.
This may explain why in early 1991, I was invited to attend a closed-door meeting with a small group of business insiders to discuss rap music's new direction. Hmm. Rap music's new direction.
Yeah.
Little did I know, we would be asked to participate in one of the most unethical and destructive business practices ever seen.
Christ.
So this was the meeting. The meeting was held at a private residence on the outskirts of Los Angeles. I remember about 25 to 30 people were being there.
Right.
Most of them familiar faces. Speaking of those I knew, we joked about the theme of the meeting, as many of us did not care for rap and failed to see the purpose of being invited to a private meeting to discuss the future of hip-hop.
Talk to him.
Among the attendees was a small group of unfamiliar faces who stayed to themselves and made no attempt to socialize beyond their circle. Based on their behavior and formal appearances, they didn't seem to be from our industry. Our casual chatter was interrupted when we were asked to sign the confidentiality agreement preventing us from publicly discussing the information presented during the meeting. Needless to say, This intrigued, in some cases, disturbed many of us. The agreement was only a page long, but very clear on matters and consequences, which stated that violating the terms would result in job termination immediately. We asked several people what this meeting was about and the reason for such secrecy, but could not find anyone who had the answers for us. A few people refused to sign and walked out. Nobody stopped them. I was tempted to follow, but curiosity got the best of me.
That's right.
A man who was part of the unfamiliar group collected all the agreements from us. So now, if we get to the good part, because the meeting about to start.
Talk to him, Jay.
It says, quickly after the meeting began, hold on 1 second.
Get your popcorn, y'all.
Popcorn, get your pistol. No,
for real though.
Quickly after this meeting began, one of the industry colleagues, who shall remain nameless like everybody else, thanked us for attending. He then gave the floor to a man who only introduced himself by first name and gave no other details about his personal background. I think he was the owner of the residence, but that was never confirmed. He briefly praised all of us for the success we had achieved in our industries and congratulated us for being selected as part of this small group of decision makers. At this point, I began to feel slightly uncomfortable in the strangeness of this gathering. The subject quickly changed as the speaker went on to tell us that the respective companies we represented had invested in a very profitable industry, which could become even more rewarding with our active involvement.
Damn.
He explained that the companies we worked for had invested millions into the building of privately owned prisons, and that our positions of influence in the music industry would actually impact the profitability of these investments. Then he says, I remember many of us in the group immediately looking at each other in awe and confusion. At the same time, I didn't know what a private prison was, but I wasn't the only one. Sure enough, someone asked what these prisons were and what any of this had to do with music. We were told that these prisons were built by privately owned companies who receive funding from the government based on the number of inmates.
Mm-hmm.
The more inmates, the more the government would pay these prisons.
Mm-hmm.
It was also made clear to us that since these prisons are privately owned, as they become publicly traded, we'd be able to buy shares. Most of us were taken back by this. Again, a couple of people asked what this had to do with us. At this point, my industry colleague, who had first opened the meeting, took the floor again and answered our questions. He told us that since our employees had become solid investors in this prison business, it was now in their interest to make sure that these prisons remain filled. Our job would be to help make this happen by making music which promotes criminal behavior, rap being the music of choice. He assured us that this would be a great situation for us because rap music was becoming an increasingly profitable market for our companies, and as employees, we'd also be able to buy stocks in these prisons. Immediately, silence came over the room. You could have heard a pin drop. I remember looking around to make sure I wasn't dreaming and saw half of the people with dropped jaws. My daze was interrupted when someone shouted, "Is this a fucking joke?" At this point, things became chaotic.
Right.
Two of the men who were part of the unfamiliar group grabbed the man who shouted and attempted to remove him from the house. A few of us, myself included, tried to intervene. One of them pulled out a gun, and we all backed off. They separated us from the crowd, and all four of us was escorted outside. My industry colleague, who opened up the meeting earlier, hurried out to meet us and reminded us that we had signed an agreement and would suffer the consequences of speaking out about this publicly or even those who attended the meeting.
Damn.
I asked him, why was he involved with something so corrupt? And he replied, it's bigger than the music business and nothing we can do. It's bigger than the music business and nothing we'd want to challenge without risking consequences. We all protested as we walked back into the house. I remember word for word the last thing he said, "It's out of my hands now. Just remember, you signed an agreement. He then closed the door behind him. The men rushed us to our car and actually waited until we drove off the property.
Damn.
So this meeting, bro.
Now, that's a lot for a meeting right there.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, and this person later on, he said, you know, this person actually ended up leaving the music industry after this happened. A few years after this, he ended up leaving the music industry.
Okay.
And he said he just, like, you know, over the years, he just felt guilty because he said as he sat back and he watched these plans come into play, come to a reality.
Over two decades.
He sat back and was like, wow, they really pulled it off.
Yeah.
They really pulled this off. He was like, they were told not to sign any more political rappers, any more rappers that had messages in their
no
music.
No positivity.
It was all to be gangster rap music that they promoted and put out.
So if you wonder where Brand Nubians went, if you wonder where Brand Nubians went, where Poor Righteous Teachers went, where Public Enemy went, where KRS-One went, and all sorts of groups like that that was talking,
yeah.
Even Queen Latifah and Moni Love and those, you know,
everybody.
What I'm saying? It's a back door.
Yeah, anything that was harmless, fun rap, you know, anything that had a message in it had to go.
It's running this rap shit. Corporate force is running this rap shit. Tall Israeli is running this rap shit. We poke out our asses for a chance to cash in. Cocaine is running this rap shit. Joe Yak and E-Pills is running this rap shit. Quasi homosexuals is running this rap shit. What, yo? We're running the world.
This is the Drink Champs, the number one podcast in the business. And right now, we're talking to, hands down, the most important man, in my opinion, in the whole music game. He's a mogul. He's been doing this. He personally signed me and taught me how to be a man with money. Right now, we got Leo Combs on the line. Let's make some noise! Yo, Leo, I got to big you up off top, man.
Well, I want to address the comment you made about Mogul. I don't consider myself a mogul. Self a servant. I prefer if you could replace mogul with humble servant.
My beef was with Lior because I think he's a fake CEO and I think he's fronting on my culture, but he can't front on anybody else. And I'm calling him out publicly and I want him to stop trying to rape my culture. Go make some money with some other people. They have people that their job is to create beef so that they can monetize it. Pause. But they don't let their culture feel it. But they make money from it and they can't make any money or get any respect in their culture. That's why they're in our culture. It is what it is. It's a perfect example of what they always do to us. They always try to, you know, offer some paper bag of money or whatever it is, whatever selfish agenda, which is the test, and then have us divide so they can benefit and take the fight off of them and put the focus on them. Never had a beef with Jay. Always with Lior and his whole crew. He's the one that ruined Rockefeller.
I think it's fair to continuously make money off our culture, not make money off your own culture, not use any of your money to help our culture, but use the money you make from us to help your own culture and then not to give the respect to the people that are the DNA.
Call Kevin Lyles.
I don't think I've ever seen a Lior Cohen interview.
Exactly. Of course you don't see. Of course you don't see the puppet master.
I don't like who he empowers and the way he empowers them. I didn't like when he hired Todd Moskowitz to run Asylum. I didn't think Todd as a lawyer knew anything about music. It just seemed like complete nepotism and he was using other people's money.
He got a job because of nepotism. Ask them why they got their jobs. That's what I want to see. How did Joey get the job president of Urban? And what does that mean? I need to see credentials.
And I have to worry about being manipulated by somebody that's smiling, pretending that he's with you, but he's robbing you. Because when they rob you, they don't come as an enemy. They come as a friend. But I've been to these Jewish events, and I have nothing against Jewish, where I've seen him make Jay-Z give speeches. And I've been like, well, I don't understand why that doesn't happen in my culture. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'll tell you right now, stay clear of Lior. He will rob you. He will ruin you for the money. And when you're with him, you look like a slave because that's how he looks at you. Trust me on that.
All right, welcome back. This is Hanukkah Radio, and we have a special, special guest calling in today, a luminary in our business and a proud Jew, Lior Cohen, ladies and gentlemen.
Clap it up, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
Lior.
Thank you. I'm so thrilled and honored to be asked to do your radio station, especially on the last day of Hanukkah. L'chaim. Shalom.
We are honored to have
you. How could I help you?
Well, Lior, this one of the things we do here is we don't necessarily get too religious and talk about Hanukkah and what it stands for, although, you know, we have gotten into that in the past, but it's more of a celebration of, you know, Judaism and hip hop, since we are a hip hop station and that's what we do, and your roots are definitely in hip hop.
Jewish people have always been involved in urban cultural arts all the way back to the early beginnings of jazz music. It's just something that's always happened.
Right.
It's a blessing. It's a blessing that I was lucky enough to be part of this industry, and it was a blessing that people treated me inside and out with so much respect.
You get criticized a lot, you know, from other execs and people like Dame Dash that call you a culture vulture, that you haven't done things. Does that bother you, or how do you feel about that? No, it actually doesn't bother me. It would bother me if it came from a credible source. And if it's a credible source, then we could have a conversation and actually have a discussion, because if someone thinks something about me that I may have done to offend them or hurt them or do something that they misunderstand, then we'll have a dialogue.
Mm-hmm. About
and then
that
we'll
specific
communicate
thing, yeah.
and get to an understanding and move on or not.
Right.
But, you know, I can't give any light to that. It's a clown right now.
The way it was going and looking, it looked like Jay was doing everything because they blacklisted Dame. And Dame say he wasn't blacklisted, he's lying. He's blacklisted. You know what I'm saying? I remember one day I seen Leo Cohen, and I'm like, yo, what up? I'm choked, you know, I'm the one that shot the Congresswoman or whatever with Dame. And nigga Leo Cohen say to me, you know what? Yeah, and I shut that motherfucker down. He told me that on 23rd.
He's talking about he shut Dame Dash down?
Yeah, he said, wow. I shut that motherfucker down.
And to make a long story short, just to run down my resume really quickly, I created this show called Spring Bling. Artists like Eve. I put Eve, I helped create that image that we see it for now. Even after I left BET, I was Dave Chappelle's stand-in. So I saw everything that happened with him. And to really capitalize it even more, basically, since 1997, whatever has happened in urban America as far as the perception on television and film, I was basically the fly on the wall. So for me and the fellas around me, it was all fun, but we did not know that we were a part of a system. Even going back to what the brother talked about with the homosexuality, with the rap, here's the kicker. It's not that the rappers are gay. That's not it. That's a misconception. What it is, it's about control. See, that's what makes it, that's why you see so many buffoons nowadays in television and film doing things that we know are like, wow, Jamie Foxx, you would say that? Wow, Jay-Z, you would actually sit there and do an anti-Semitic commercial? Because they're in a bond, because see, Jay-Z's not gay. I'll use him as an example. He's not gay. But once you reach a certain level within that weapon of mass destruction, you have to give something up. There's something that you're going to give up, because you got to be down with that crew. And how do I know? Because it happened to me. That is why I'm standing here talking right now. I reached a certain level in that station. I was the only producer to ever come as a new kid and create a multi-million-dollar revenue-generating show. I was the only producer in there that artists would come and be like, oh, I need D. Brad to do my show, or that actually helped create an image for artists. So it reached a certain point where now it's time for them to introduce me to the inner workings of this monster that's created. So now you have a rapper who will get turned out by a high-ranking label exec because, well, what you gonna do? I mean, if I want to be a rapper and I walk in and the label exec tells me that this is what I need to do for him because, hey, he put my album on when I really wasn't that talented. But they pushed me because they saw that I was something that they could sell. So when you bring me in a room and there's my favorite rapper right there who's in the same room, so that must mean he must have committed the same gay act as I did. So at the end of the day, depending on where your level is within yourself, you're gonna do it. You understand? So I literally lived the devil taking me up the mountain and saying, you need to go to the left. You can have all of this. And it was, I was there. I was there. It was ritualistically done. The vice president sent his right-hand man to me 3 straight weekends. They do everything in threes. 3 weekends in a row. Hey, D-Brad, let's go hang out. And every weekend, he kept beating me in the head. Get rid of this Rap City, man. You can do more than Rap City, D-Brad. You can do more than you. You need to come with us. Then the third night, it was the vice president's birthday. They picked me up in a long white stretch limo. We go to Joe's Uptown, up in the Bronx in New York. We go to Joey hanging in VIP, get me everything I want. Then every time we hung out, it was the same way. Then they bring me to the back room. And in the back room, they had this long table with a white sheet set out. I mean, beautiful thing. Looked like the damn Last Supper. On one end is Derek Jeter. There's Stephon Marbury. There's Fat Joe. And I'm chilling. But the whole night, the vice president is on me like this. I'm trying to talk to the model chicks. He's like, nah, D-Brad, come on, sit right here. So then we party, but I'm not a drinker. So if I don't get unnecessary spirits inside of me, we get inside the limo. He drops his right-hand man off quickly. We're in the car, the man standing across looking at me like I owe him something now. And I know the look because when I was young, I had the same look for women that I took out. So I know the look and I know the energy. And while he's doing that, he's sitting there with his legs spread open, rubbing his balls. Now, I'm in a situation where I'm like, now what am I going to do? This is my vice president. This is my boss. But the problem is I was just raised differently. You understand what I'm saying? I was brought up differently. So for me, I had to turn that away. But what the hell that I caught after that, this is why I don't come down on those who buffoon to sell out, because everybody ain't built for this war. Everybody's not built for that. I've been homeless. I've had my name destroyed. You understand? I've had to walk with my head up when I've been dead ass broke. He ain't seen me for like a year because I wasn't coming home when I was broke like that. I was ashamed of myself. I went from being a man to nothing because I would not cross over. As a television producer who was Dave Chappelle's stand-in, which means I did his rehearsals season one or two of Chappelle's show, I saw what happened to Dave. Dave used to give me advice all the time. And one of the key things he told me was, no matter how much money they offer you, and he said they, as he pointed to my chest, he said, never forget who you are or where you come from. And he walked away from me. And I didn't get it at the time until the nigga left. Then I said, oh. And him and Charlie Murphy would tell me the same things all the time. And then I got it. This is a war. And there is these cats are sorcerers. And we need to take, and I know the words magic and sorcery takes people to make you think that I'm talking about the Eastwick Chronicles or Harry Potter, but this is real. Because it's affecting our babies. So when they see all these signs visually that say 75% of the new HIV cases in New York are blacks and Latinos, it gives them the impression that everybody black and Latino got is HIV positive, had AIDS. And I tell people all the time, I'm 35, I ain't never been to an AIDS funeral.
It's to take our minds off the real battle that's going on behind the music industry and say, oh, you know, those guys at the top, they making sure that nobody else can't get on. And you can't even blame Jay-Z. Why would you want to even blame that guy? You got to look at the Jewish guy or whatever. These guys like in these corporations that are anonymous, you know, to the world, you know.
Told me, please, record companies the pimp, please, the artist is the hoe, please, the stage is the corner, please, and the audience is the trick.
Mamas, don't let your kids grow up to be rappers, unless you tell them if they gonna get this business, they better learn this business.